Hello, and wow, do we have a show for you today. We have a couple of men that are going to be joining us at Two Moms on a Burro with Carol and Renee. Carol, I know you're on air already with me. Good morning. How are you this morning? Well, we're having an interesting morning with our studio in that I'm not hearing you right now. Carol, can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
There, I can now.
Okay.
I'm really
greetings,
excited
everyone,
about this
show. And very happy. Let's go with this, Renee, and let the people hear what they have to say. This is going to be great.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I know we've got the gentleman in queue already, and what today's show is going to be is about the human element of what happened in Benghazi. These are two gentlemen who were first responders to the events in Benghazi. They were told to stand down. And for those patriots we know across this nation, for those Americans we know across this nation who are dealing with the understanding that our public servants and maybe those in office are not really doing the job for we the people, and there's other things going on. So we're not going to play music today. We're not going to be doing anything flowery. We're going to get right into these men. And I'm going to pull in first. I think I know what happened there. I saw we had Mark online, but he fell off. But let me go ahead and bring in Chris. Chris, good morning. How are you this morning, sir?
Good. How are you? Me and Mark, we're sitting here together trying to figure out which number to call. So I'm going to tell him to call in that 646 number. So
he gets him.
Without our wives here, we don't know. We're clueless. We have no idea what's going on.
Well, at least you admit that. But guess who I have on? Mark, I have you on air now. Is that you?
Yeah, this is me. How are you?
Good, good. What's interesting is that this really is going to be a show for the people and the human element. And it's going to show that no matter what you guys have done for a living, as far as being contractors and military contractors, Carol and I know quite a few gentlemen who do this for a living. And boy, when you start hearing the stories and you start hearing the human element, it's amazing. So what I'd like you two gentlemen to do for us today is, I know you're traveling all over the world here. Well, I call it the world because this is my world, all over the nation, doing interviews and such. So you, I was speaking to Mark, and you guys probably have a pretty good checkoff list of how to explain what you experienced. And what I'd like you to do is the two of you explain what you experienced for our listeners, because many have heard you and have chimed in and are very excited about having you on air with us today. And then what we're going to do is we're actually going to get into the human element side of this. And we have some questions for you that no one has actually, we have not seen on air with you. So, gentlemen, if you will, please, Mark and Chris, please introduce yourself. Take us through the Benghazi event as you experienced it. And we will go from there into the human element. So thank you both again for joining us. Let's get right into it. Tell us about your day in Benghazi on 9/11.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man. This is Chris of Pirano. I'm Tano. And to all your listeners that don't know my call sign there, that's how I'm pretty much known by everybody within the community. But, you know, my luckily Mark and I were you've got two different elements, because Mark and I were doing two different things that day. So my day in 9/11, actually, I was on what's called a quick reaction force for our own team, which we usually have two guys set aside that are just on standby with a radio and phone, taking in calls or collecting information in town that if there's anything negative going on, or it could be endangering our own guys that are out doing ops like Mark was that night, that we'd be on standby, we'd alert them, and if they were attacked, we would be, up and ready to go within a couple minutes and we'll be out the gate. So it was relatively quiet all day. I mean, nothing was going on. We had no reports of a protest, of a video, nothing going on. And come around 9:30, we in the evening time, that's when things started to heat up, and we got a call that the prophet was under attack. And we hustled, got our gear on, And we're ready to go within 5 minutes, and we're ready to head out the gate. And during this time, we can hear the firefights. We can see the tracers in the air. We can hear the explosions from the RPGs, because the consulate's only about a mile away, three-quarters of a mile is the profile. from the annex, and the conflict was where the Department of State officials were, the annexes where we were located, the CIA annex. And, you know, 5 minutes, we're jocked up, ready to go, and jocked up being having all our gear, all our weapons on, having our vehicles staged and ready to shoot out the gate, and we were told to wait. We were delayed for that first 5 minutes, and I have to say that we were a bit disappointed, but, you know, we stood down, and we got in our vehicles, and we just stood by and listened on the radio. The thing that people don't get is, and don't understand is, we shared the same communications with the State Department guys, the Alec Wicklund, Dave Lubin, I mean, Alec Henderson, Dave Lubin, and Scott Wicklund. And we could hear them asking us for help, saying, hey, guys, we need you here now. You know, they're giving us play-by-play and telling us the buildings are getting shot up, telling us that the buildings are starting to get lit on fire. And all we can do is we're just sitting there waiting for the okay from our leadership to head down the road. And 15 more minutes go by, and then and then 15 minutes go by, and then we got told to stand down. That was the actual stand down words were said by our chief of base or our person in charge. And that's when we all really were getting upset. We did wait 10 more minutes. So a total of 25 minutes had gone by, but we finally just said, heck with it. We left and we shut out the gate and we went to the firefight. And, you know, I'll shorten that. That's important to me because I want to clarify that the stand-down order was set to us. People don't understand.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to interrupt you there because I've watched your faces in these interviews, and I see the intensity. I see the tearing up. And as a person, as a woman, as someone who looks at you guys and think about if this was my son, I'm watching tell this story. It made me cry because my son, if you were my son, I was looking at you in that manner, and I know Carol and I talk about the human element all the time. What we see is a man who was doing what he was told to do because that was your job, but at a point where you realize that what you are being told to do is in conflict with what your job really is about, all of a sudden nobody can say you did anything against orders, truly, because you know what, dear man, this is what our whole country right now is up against and having is, there comes a point where you have to look at who you're working for and question, am I really working for someone who is on the right side?
It's that thing we struggle with. You said it perfectly. I couldn't even said it any better than that. That's exactly how we still feel. You know, and continue on tonight. That's basically how the night went, where we went and we saved the guys at the consulate. We got back to our annex. We fought off two counterattacks that were pretty intense. Thought we were out of the clear, and then come about 5 o'clock in the morning, we found out we weren't out of the clear. We got hit by those mortars and another RPG attack, and we lost Ty and Bub. And Mark, you'll talk to Oz here soon. He was severely injured, and so was Dave Ubin. And then we ended up waiting another 10 o'clock in the morning till we finally left, and that was per Libyan aircraft. So it's disheartening. You know, and this is the thing I can say on here is the first words I said when I talked to my wife, I called her up from the tarmac, which is the airfield of Benina, and I said, hey, I said, they left us. That was the first thing that I said to her, and she goes, who left you? And I said, whoever I work for. I couldn't say it over the phone because it was an open net, an open line. I said, who we work for, they left us. I said, but I'm okay, and I'll be home as soon as possible, and I hung up the phone. So it still gives me, if you can tell, I'm pretty angry about it, even talking about it now.
Well, you know, as you should be, and rightly so, because if you weren't angry about it, you wouldn't have a heart, you wouldn't have a soul. You gentlemen went in and did a job that anyone should do, that you are the men that we need helping our country. Have found much evidence that the foreign entities that are actually running our country, you have to understand, we're not anti-government at all. We're just anti-corruption. And when we have men like you going in and doing a job that you believe is for the country, and even though you're private contractors, you're all military, so that never leaves you. And I'd like to, can I ask you about that? Your military background,
when you realize they left you behind, because that is a military saying, they left us behind. No man should be left behind. The men who gave the orders for stand down, were they prior military?
No, they weren't. Bob was a 30-year veteran of the Alphabet Soup Company. the Culinary Arts Institute, and he didn't have that. He, you know, I'm sure his career as a case officer had probably been stellar, according to them, and that he had done what needed to be done in the past. But I don't think he had the experience of serving. Maybe serving in combat zones, but not serving in combat. And, you know, that's a big difference. You can be in Iraq and not serve in combat. And
correct.
Being, you know, being there and having to – go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I don't want to interrupt you, and I'm sorry, because, I go back to this is what is a problem. We have a lot of people at the top who have come there as attorneys, prior military. And there's a very different mindset. And I'll say it exactly as the Deputy Attorney General of California told one of my friends, attorneys lie. Lawyers lie. Now, that's coming straight from a Deputy Attorney General in California who is an attorney. So do you guys feel that you were lied to?
You know, I think that throughout my career, there's been a lot of different things that have been said by people in government that don't necessarily turn out to be true. I mean, the government, she is a, sometimes can be a wicked woman to work for. But, you know, as contractors, as military, our thing is about serving the people, serving the country. And when we say serving the country is the people. It's not the administration, which whether it's this one or the next one or the past ones. I mean, we serve the people. And having the truth and the courage to stand up, and, you know, I hope that by doing this, we set an example for other people that know that, you know, you have to stand up for what is right, what is not just what your job is, but what is right, and you know what's right in your heart and soul.
Right.
You know, and that's one of those things that I say that, I mean, you know, we have to, as citizens, we have to demand that of our electorate. Those
yes,
that we elect,
do.
We have to demand from them that they are truthful.
Exactly, and that's a big part of, we had CISPO on a week ago, and we're having them on again with Sheriff Mack and the constitutional sheriffs in the United States, who I see, and Carol sees, we see them as our guards and defense against the corruption, but yet many of them don't know they're truly able to supersede the president. So back to Benghazi. The day that that this all went down in the evening, I saw that February 17 was the militia group that was in charge of guarding the consulate, correct? The embassy.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, that's correct. They were in charge of that.
They were in charge of that. So what I heard in previous interviews was that you thought that you were going to meeting up with them to offer security and to go in. What happened with this unit? They called it a militia. So I believe that this originally was a team who was sent in to do the right thing for you guys. Is that correct?
You know,
well,
we never had a...
17 was a... They give, you know, like a lot of the militias, they are to the highest bidder. And they're going to pick the side that they think is winning. And at that point, they thought we were the biggest power and we were going to be the biggest dog in the fight. So, you know, they were supportive of that. Now, of course, that militia probably was intertwined or with a lot of fanaticals that probably believe more so towards the al-Sharia, Ansar al-Sharia side, which nowadays, you know, you see what they've done is they've flipped because they are actually being attacked by the Libyan government because they are allied with Ansar al-Sharia, who is allied with ISIS.
Yeah.
Right.
They've sworn allegiance to, and so at that time we had ideas, and we had even put that out to the State Department guys. Hey, these guys, you can't trust them. We believe they're Islamists infiltrated in them, and that we knew we couldn't trust them. And how they got to be the security there at the consulate is beyond all of our explanations. We have no idea how that happened. Worst outsourcing ever, we could say.
Well, can I ask you this? Just as a person on the outside, now I'm a mom, so my thing is, as a mom, when my children make alliances with friends or work, people that surround them, I start to question, well, what does so-and-so do? How are their parents? So when you have these things going on, and now we have coming out that there was possible gun running, well, not possible.
Yeah.
Some are saying it was definitely happening. Okay, well, I as a parent would say, okay, son, you can't play with them anymore. I don't care if they are on your team. They're not doing the right thing. So how do we end up with the Red Cross leaving and everybody else leaving because of the danger, and this man coming in and... I'm having to bring that up because I believe that that is truly an element that you gentlemen could have gotten from our own government running guns. Could that be a potentially situation as to why the 17th February left?
You know, and I was asked that question before, similar. I can't answer it. I can't dispute that. You know, and that's the sad thing is that was that going on there? Did they know that for a fact, that they were putting bad guys in to protect the State Department? Did they leave us behind, you know, was it on purpose because they didn't want things? You can speculate, but if you ask me that question, I can't honestly say to you, you know what, no, our government would never do that. I can't say that to you. That says something.
Can I say something for a moment?
Please do, Carol, because this is really important. You gentlemen are going to want to really listen to what Carol has to say here, because we do believe that this is going to help maybe settle your thought process or bring you into thinking outside the box. Go ahead, Carol.
Yeah, here in the United States, I help my husband. He purchases guns. So I went to fill out a sales sheet for him, much like your wives just helped you call into the show. I'm awesome. Us wives are awesome, I tell you.
Yes.
So, and I'm sure your wives are just quite lovely. I'm so happy you're home with them. That's wonderful. But anyway, I went to help him purchase a gun, and I looked at the state of Indiana because he could have filled out an application there, and it said to fill out every single slot. Well, I went to help him purchase a gun, and it happened to be ran out of a car parts store, and a deputy sheriff or one of the sheriffs is running this joint, and he said, I need your help with this because every time I go to buy a gun, I have problems. Well, the guy that was selling it was telling me, don't fill that out, and he said, I know it's weird. They have places for three different slots for Latinos. Don't fill that out. And then it had America's and the United States of America, two different spaces for two different countries, basically, the United States of America and then just the Americas.
Americas. Oh, wow.
So I thought, what are they doing and why? And I told him, I said, the state says that I have to fill out everything, and you're telling me no? Can I get a copy of this? He said, no, you can't. Well, about that time, a police officer came over and goes, is she giving you problems? I said, no, I'm not. I'm asking him a question.
Wow.
Because I wanted to know why they're leaving these slots open. Now, here in Indiana, I have found a warrant database that I wasn't supposed to have found. I found it. And in the warrant database, it shows, like, automatic weapons. It shows the identification numbers and everything for it. And this is the crooks product where they tapped into our database, the country's database. So that may help you to kind of realize what could be going on over there when you know what's really going on over here.
I can't dispute it.
Well, that might help you. I just wanted to add that in because that's for sure going on over here. I experienced it.
Right. And I thank you for that information. I mean, that's the information that needs to get out to all the Americans, the U.S. Americans, because, again, it's what our elected officials do in our name. And if they're doing stuff in our name, we need to know about it.
You got it.
And we got to hold them accountable. I mean, we can do that this November, and that's what's important, is holding them accountable and making sure they do what we want them to do, balancing that playing field.
It's kind of scary with thinking about it. And do I think like that? Honestly, yes, I do. Do I have anything solid? Well, you know, I got more things solid because of where I work that I can say, you know what, my opinion on this, probably 75% right on, just because of who I work for and where I was and what happened to us that night. So,
well, I can get you the.
I agree. I can get you
if anybody needs that information. I have it, and I've turned it over to many government agencies. They're aware of it. They so far nothing's been done. As far as I know, those applications are still being filled out that way, and that leads me. And these are new applications, by the way. And the guy wouldn't let me
have
a copy.
I would,
but
I
I'm
would
sure
love
we can get a copy.
That'd be great.
Yeah, we'll
please
make that happen. We'll get that to
you
guys because that'll help. Back to some other questions I have as taking notes. You know, I know that Sean Smith was there as an aide to the ambassador. Now,
it
was interesting, the story being told. And I can't remember the gentleman's name who was actually right on detail on him, the gentleman that tried to get them out through the window.
Actually, that we had three guys. Our two of our guys, Jack and John Tig Tegan, and then Alec Henderson Scott Wicklund was the one he was with inside the building. But when we grabbed him out of there, it was Jack Silva, one of our guys, and then Dave Lubin actually helped him get out the window when we found him already expired, already dead in the villa.
Wow. Now that right there, have you had any conversations with his parents, with his mother or father?
We recently met her in Texas, and we hung out with her for 2-3 days, and I call her every couple weeks. Because no parent should have to go through that. She did not know for 2 years what happened. She did not know until we sent her a copy of our book and asked her to read it and said, "Hey, this is so you know what happened." And she got through it. And during that time when she was reading it, I was calling her to make sure she was okay. I said, "Hey, are you okay with this?" She goes, "Well, I'm having a hard time reading it, but I'm glad to know finally." And I think the biggest thing that helped with her was when we told her that, you know, her son, she thought her son's handprints, you know, there's an iconic picture of the bloody handprints on one of the walls.
On the wall.
And
and
she thought that was her son. And I said, "No, ma'am, that wasn't. We found him. He wasn't desecrated." And I told her what happened. And I did. I said a prayer over him when we put him in the back of our vehicle to get him back to the annex. And basically, we're her adopted sons now. She's an awesome lady. She came to a couple of our book signings. She just wants to be around us, and I love her to death. And I'll probably give her a call right when we get off the phone here and see how she's doing again.
Well, I hope you do because that is what's going on in my mind. I'm completely full of goosebumps just having you talk about her that way because as a parent, my oldest child had cancer, and I remember.
Oh, sorry.
Thinking, he's alive and he's very, very healthy now and all, and it was a long haul. But when you go through something with a child, it doesn't matter how old they are. You are men, but your parents, what about your family? If your parents are alive, what was the conversation like when you spoke to them again for the first time after getting the next day, after your very first time after that event? What was that conversation
my mother,
go ahead, Mark,
she thought I worked in Washington, D.C. I just, to protect her, I just always told her that's where I was going to work. But my wife knew where I was at, and she actually wasn't informed of what happened until the 13th it was either late on the 12th, but I think it was the morning of the 13th when the nurse, after I got out of surgery in Germany, a nurse called her and let her know that I was still alive and everything was okay.
Oh,
Ridiculous. What kind of leadership do we have? That's unheard of. To me, I didn't even know that till the Brett Bear special.
That's treasonous. That to me, terrible. I am so glad to hear you gentlemen this morning, because our country had better stand up and realize that if we have men like you who are being sent to a foreign country and contracting supposedly for our liberties and our freedoms, and it's not our liberties and our freedoms. These men going to war right now, it's not about our liberties in the United States. It's not about we the people's protection. We've got, you know, so what about now? I know this week they indicted, and I'm probably saying his name wrong because Lord knows I can't even hardly say my own half the time, but Abby Katala, he was supposedly indicted as the leader, you know, of the extremist groups. What are your thoughts on this? What did you ever see him? Was he ever present in Benghazi at any time that you know of?
Katala, he's a small time. I mean, he's a bad guy. He would be, I would say, mid level, if even that. But is him being the mastermind? No, he's not the mastermind. He's a bad guy they got, and we're gonna parade him around. And hey, look at this, we caught the Benghazi guy. No, it's smoke and mirrors again. He's a bad guy. Believe me, and he'll cut your head off in a second if you got the chance. He's not a mastermind. And he didn't mastermind that attack.
So this is very similar to what's going on in the United States with all the foreclosures and the Wall Street. And they're letting all the cockroaches be stepped on, but they're not going after the truth. This is basically covering their asses.
Exactly. That's the best way to put it right there. Said it better than I could again.
Well, and I apologize for cussing. But we've gotten too much to the point where these guys are allowed to cover their rear ends and use people like you men and your families, because this isn't just you. You are our family. You are Carol and my boys. You are our family as well, because we are American. What taken from this, Chris, Mark, both of you, when you go to a foreign country, okay, we're fighting. But like in anything, we have to teach our children that different cultures have different ways of life. It is not our duty to change the way they are until it affects our country and here on our ground. So we're over there calling all kinds of names of these people and sending people in, but what are your thoughts now that you've been through this? Are we a country that needs to start worrying a little bit more about our own borders and our homeless and our sick and our poor before we start sending billions of dollars out of this country to end up arresting a cockroach like Katala?
Yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
Give us some thoughts there. Expand on that.
Well, here, this is Tano again. My opinion, and I think it's a pretty valid opinion, is definitely we need to pull that stuff back here. We don't need to be giving money to the Muslim Brotherhood anymore. Now there's always some underlying maybe there's, but to maybes and what ifs, that's not good enough. We need to start doing, and it is, it's a big deal. It should be, people should be a bit concerned about what's coming into the country here, and we need to tighten it up. And we don't need to send money overseas anymore to these. They're attacking us. Why the heck are we sending money to people that are attacking us or that hate Americans, you know, wanting to behead us? It's common sense. I don't get it. And from seeing what I've seen overseas, there are some good people. Don't get me wrong. Not everybody wants to kill Americans over. But if they're not willing to stand up for themselves or defend themselves against some of the extremists, you know, then honestly, if you're not on our side, then if you're not doing that, you're not on our side. And so you know what? Guess what? You're on your own. And then if you attack us, we're going to come in, we're going to hit you hard. Not just bomb you, we're going to come in and hit you hard. We're going to get your hierarchy, take them to Gitmo, get their information we need out of them, you know, that this waterboarding thing, that's ridiculous. We were waterboarded when we were going through all of our special ops training. That's nothing. You know, bring these guys in and you know, continue what kind of what we were doing from you know, 01 to when the attack happened, 01 to 07. Let's go ahead and mask these guys and get their hierarchies and interrogate the heck out of them, put them in Gitmo, don't give them, you know, Cush livings over there, and then tighten up our own borders and go out and get more bad guys, because they're not going to stop. They're not ever going to stop, and they're going to keep trying to infiltrate our country, and it looks like they're doing a pretty dang good job of it.
Well, basically, we're opening the door for them. Speaking of opening the door, Mark, that night when you were called back to the annex, again, I watched your face. Can you take us through what you were thinking in the drive back to the annex, and when you realized that all hell had broken loose and it was coming straight back in a fury? Can you take us back to that car ride back with the people you were with, and some things that were said there, and how you felt, et cetera? Go ahead and bring us through that part of your experience.
Did we lose Mark?
Yep.
Did we lost? Hey, look at that. He needs his wife there for him to help him operate his phone.
Let me see. No, he's still on. We just apparently can't hear him. So, Chris, tell us about, and we'll come back to Mark on that question. Let's see. What happened? He muted himself. He's hearing us. Chris, can you hear us now? Or Mark?
Yeah, I can hear you. I got you. I can hear you.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I can hear you guys all the time. I'm not sure what happened to my something on the line. Just wouldn't let me talk. Probably them looking down, trying to listen in on me. But, you know, that night with the case officer, my biggest concern was keeping her calm. You know, she was getting a little riled up, and, you know, I had to just tell her that, you know, you need to stay calm. Just look, you keep your eyes out there looking for things and let me know. Don't be trying to tell me where to go, what to do, or anything like that. You're in our world now, and sit back and pay attention to things that are going on outside this car. And it kind of calmed her down. It gave her stuff to do, and focused her on doing what needed to be done, because we had to get back through a kind of a roundabout way, and we didn't know exactly what we were going to face on the way back. So, you know, and it took us about 30 minutes to split over that to get back. We didn't want to take the shortest route. We had to take a longer route to get back and avoid any possibility of being detected on the way. When I got back, the other guys had already left. They finally made the decision to, I guess you say, disobey. They didn't really, like I said earlier, I don't think it's disobey in order. They finally just left. And I had to organize the defenses for the base, not knowing what would come back or who would come back, and just be prepared for anything that was going to be coming our way, which what we expected was going to be another attack on us.
Wow. Now, when you got back with the woman that was traveling with you, where did she go while all this was going on? Where was she?
Well, we had, in the compound, there were four buildings, and we had one of them as our primary building. And I just made I got everybody that was on our compound into that building, because I didn't want a bunch of people running around not knowing where they were at, because if we got attacked or if somebody tried to sneak across our walls, I didn't want somebody being out there and not knowing who it was. And it allowed me, by keeping them in one location, in one building, it was the safest of all the buildings, and it also allowed me to keep accountability of everybody.
Well, and with her having to protect her, we haven't used her name for a reason, but
yeah.
What was she doing there? And I don't mean this to sound as ridiculous to some people as it's going to, but here we got a woman who's in the middle of this, where we've got Red Cross, everybody else leaving because of danger, what was so important with her job that she was there deflecting your attention from the annex?
Well, you know, she is a case officer, and as any case officer in any country where they may be working, that's what their job was. And that can be anything from oil and gas to who the bad guys are. I mean, in a country like Libya, I'm not in the know with all of everything they do in that respect, but they're doing what, and a lot of them, most of them are very patriotic. I mean, they're very strong. They're very patriotic people that are wanting to do the right things for their country. And that's how they feel. And, you know, they're just like us, just serving in a different way.
Well, and you bring up that this person was there, basically for intel, it sounds like, and just to make sure things were going well is right. Well, and again, it sounds like the information pretty much sucked big time, because if you've got this going on, they either have to be involved in what is happening behind the scenes or extremely naive and left out of the truth. So what can we take from this for other men who and women who are taking jobs like this throughout the world? I don't even know how to put it into words. I'm hoping you can, because I think you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest thing is they have, because I worked in counter-narcotics when I was in law enforcement. And, when you're running a source like that, you are only as good as your source, and you have to always back-check your sources. And I'm not questioning them on how they did their job, but, the biggest blame on anybody is not on the people on the ground that were doing any work there. It's on the bad guys that just chose to come after us. We can't get everything all the time. And, I think the case officers, and I've got to extend it to them. They do a heck of a job in a lot of very dangerous places in the world. Some of them do the job a little bit better than others, but, what we have to focus on is the evil that's out there trying to bring us evil, and do everything we can to get that taken care of.
Yeah. My view on that is, and I worked with the agency for several years up to and saw the changes, is on a first level COs, you're getting COs that aren't, they're the smart kids, I call them. They're the educated. They go and they get their degree. That's great. Get your Harvard degree. Come and be a CO. They're missing that street smarts that the old guys used to have. They're missing that just, hey, I can read a person. And also, when you get the young kids, and she's doing it right, they're getting the young kids so they can put them in and they can teach them how they want to teach. They don't want guys that have their own opinion. They don't want guys that may question what they're deciding to do. So the case officers that are there, they're doing what they're told. They're doing what they're trained, what they are been trained to do at the farm. But you don't have those guys there like the old guys when we first started, and the ex-mill guys that can actually think on their own, that don't have to be told what to do. They can think out of the box. And I saw that as it progressed through the years I worked with CIA. I could see the different COs that would come in. They kept getting younger, and they kept having less worldly experience. But graduating from a higher level colleges, and I saw that. So you're getting intel analysts as working as street officers. Where you my opinion is, you got to be a criminal to catch a criminal. You got to have that worldly experience, and they didn't have it. And then you also have to have the ones that can actually. We call it drinking the Kool-Aid. You don't want them. You want ones that still can form their own opinion. And when they're told something that's not right, they're willing and they're strong enough to stand up and say, you know what, this isn't right. I'm gonna question this right now. And I just didn't see that as it carried on through the different administrations. And I worked with the agency for both, so I just didn't. I saw it progressively that the case officers themselves were getting smarter, book smart, but they were getting weaker as far as having street smarts. And that's what I
and
saw.
You know,
so
what you're saying is very similar to anything. You can practice anything, but until you actually know the application of or have experience in it, and we patriots throughout the nation, we Americans that have come together, like, you know about the Bundy Ranch and the standoff there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of misinformation as well as disinformation. We saw a lot of private contractors come through there who, I don't know whether it was to give contractors a bad name or to just set people up with misinformation, but seeing and listening to you guys, my question to you is, what can we do as civilians, as a nation, even as veterans in the nation, to help educate those who are going very young into the private military contracting with Blackwater, you know, Kraft? We're seeing a lot of very, like you said, very young, smart individuals, but their behavior is not good. Their acts upon the very people they should be protecting have become egregious and out of control. How can we fix that? Do you have any thoughts as to what we can do here in our country with our private contractors? What do you think?
I think it starts with giving them a good foundation in Dodge country and patriotism. And that foundation that you get through your faith, at least that's what gives me the foundation that I have. And, you know, our education system has been inundated with extreme left viewpoints, and we need to take that back, because it's all about the way we raise our kids and have integrity, to have the courage to tell the truth, to have that truth and courage.
Yeah,
and
you got to... You
got
to start. I'm sorry about that. You got to start young, and you got to start with your kids. And you know, if you have to implement punishment when something's wrong, but you also have to implement encouragement to get back up and start again, and then praise when they do something right. But I agree the same as Mark. You know, with the education system, that's hurting us big time. You got to get some more. And you know, left, right, he's right that there's extreme left wing on the education system, especially when you get up into the higher education level. We got to get some more conservative views in there.
Speaking of higher education level, have any of the universities requested your presence to speak in political sciences or anything? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, isn't it? And I do have a master's degree from University of Nebraska in public affairs. And yeah, you would think, but I think we're too political. Our views are too political. That's the excuse they use. We're too political. Well, we're not too political. We just don't side with the political views on college campuses right now. So I doubt
that
we ever will be.
How can we change that? I know you say I'm a problem solver.
With you guys, if we have to have the American public, we have to have people like yourself push it and question it. There's one thing I found with some of the left-leaning, especially extreme left-leaning people, if they're questioned and continually questioned, they either will give an excuse that's ridiculous and then back down, or they may relent eventually. It's like I take it as like a bully. They're bullies, and until you stand up and you push back, they're going to keep bullying you. And that's the only thing we can keep doing. You got to keep, and that's our support. We're going to keep doing that. We're going to keep being on the road and talking to people and telling our story, and whether they agree with it or not, hey, this is the truth. But the only way that we can get helped and to keep moving that along is like your radio show right now. We've got to have more people that are willing to put us on.
The colleges won't do this. What if we were to, all of us moms, dads across the nation, go to our schools where our children are in junior high and high school, and on these career days, say, you know what, we would like you to offer career day to some men we know to come in and explain something that they've done, military background, do we start at the junior high and high school level now? Because elementary, of course, it's going to be a little different to do. But at junior high and high school, I mean, I can't see why they wouldn't maybe be able to open some doors. There's some, you know, think about the high schools in the nation, Columbine. Some of these schools that have been really on the mark, have you thought of going into any of those and offering discussion on career day even for what you've done or what you do or history?
I've reached out to my own local, where I attended. And actually, I did do one speaking event at an elementary school. It was a middle school. It was for sixth graders. And they loved it. And they asked great questions. So I think starting at that level, in the middle school level, and speaking to them, that's where you plant that seed, or at least you're trying to cultivate the right seed. I've reached out to my own locals, but I have not reached out to outside of my own community or where I attended.
Well, it just takes one at a time, and you can build a beautiful block rock wall. It may take a long time if you do it one rock at a time, but eventually you've got that wall. So I hope that you will do more of that on your trips. Maybe reach out to some of the local schools that are around your book signings. Invite their student, their student unions or their ASB, and to come to your book signings. And I'll tell you what, those kids will get excited and want you to come to this because you two are just amazing. You three, all of you.
You want a beer? You can be our publicist. You want a new job? That sounds awesome.
I'm more than happy to help you.
You are hired.
I'm more than happy. Well, I will help you do that because I can tell you the one arena, I was a PTA president long ago, and boy, you want to talk politics. I don't care what these people tell you. Everything is political. So they can say you're too political. Well, guess what? So is buying toilet paper because somebody owns the company that owns the manufacturing that's foreign. You know, it's all political. So, so now tell me this. I've got all these questions because I am a questioner. And I'm going to ask you about Bob, who gave the stand-down orders. I'm going to ask you something about Bob. Do we have a name yet behind who told Bob, Petraeus, not him, but who told him to tell Bob?
We still don't have a name yet. It stayed within Libya, but his immediate chain of command would have been our station chief there in Tripoli, and I know it went up to him. But as far as that, I don't know if it went up any higher. And that's people, again, that's where people that do know within the office, higher levels than us, are going to need to get some guts and quit looking at their retirement, looking at their contracting jobs after the fact, after they get their retirement, looking at money in there, and come forward and speak up. Because we don't know. And I guess Mr. Gowdy could probably subpoena a lot of people to do that. But does that mean they're still going to be telling the truth when they haven't been telling the truth for the last 2 years? I don't know. So, as far as we know, though, it's dated. Go ahead.
Well, we can all say we don't know, but that's just like, again, as a parent, when our kid walks in the door and we get a call from the principal and he said the superintendent of schools told him to call me, the parent, you know the chain of command. There is a chain of command. So people can say they don't know, but we know. So what I'm going to ask you now is a question you don't have to answer, obviously. But Hillary, when she said, "What does it matter?" I am telling you, as a mom, as thinking of all of you gentlemen there, whether the men who passed away, they almost have been a catalyst for American families, if people will just look at this and say, what does it matter? Did that really come out of her mouth?
I know. It made me, and we might have lost Mark again. I don't know if he's there or not. It made me sick to my stomach. Honestly, I wanted to reach to the TV and grab her by her scruff and say, hey, say that again. I'm looking right at you. Tell me that again, how much it doesn't matter. To me, that was total callousness, heartlessness. It shows what true color she really has. And if people think that she's not going to be like that if she becomes president, which I swear I will do everything I can to make sure that doesn't happen. But, you know, that just shows the heartlessness and the uncaring that she has.
Exactly. And she doesn't need to become president. She's a heartless bitch.
Thank you for putting. I'm glad you said it because I try to stay politically correct best I can. That's what I wanted to say. Okay, again, you said it better than I could have. Right there, that's three. That's perfect. Yeah.
Carol said it like it is, and what I want you to tell me is, what did your wife look at you and say? Did she get tears in her eyes, or did she say basically what Carol just said?
My wife said the same. My wife, yeah, she doesn't get teary-eyed at all for me. No, she does a little bit. No, she just, like, said the same thing. That can I say it? I'm not going to say it. But she, that heartless, yeah, heartless. And then she said a
heartless bitch.
Yeah, there, thank you.
And, Hillary Clinton is a heartless bitch. Do not elect her president, people. We will be in bad trouble.
Bad, seriously bad trouble. And, you know, the thing that's funny is I used to also, and I shouldn't say it's funny, but I used to take her chief of staff, I used to teach him how to shoot out in Virginia, and he would tell me, that, and she is just a terrible, I work for her, and she is a terrible person. You know, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, dude, you're a chief of staff. He's like, yeah, but I hate every minute of it. And he was a really genuine, nice guy, too. So it's not like this is the first time that she is, people know that she's heartless. I mean, it's been like this forever. I think she's so, with those words coming out of her mouth, she's so, what's the word I'm looking for? Not confident, just arrogant, that now I can say whatever I want and people are still going to love me. And it, you know, it's funny, is 35% of them still do. So
She's a sociopath. She's a sociopath, as we're noting that anyone who can even attempt to even utter those words, it just amazes the country that we have leadership who are really not leaders. Yeah. They're not leaders. They're dictators.
Well, part of what these young men have done is showed the world what this leadership is about. And what's going on is there's a bunch of butt kissers up there on the hill, and they pat each other on the back. It's almost sickening to watch. And I'm thinking, you guys need to get into the real world because nobody likes you anymore. And they're being shown this wall, this facade of fakeness and the smoke and mirrors is being brought down in part because big part of what these guys are doing coming forward.
And that's what we're doing. We're going to keep doing it too, digging in, and we're in for the long haul. I can't go fight any more wars. So guess what? You got me here now, and I'm not going anywhere.
Well, this is where we need you. This is where we need you. This is where men. We need to multiply you, and I'm sure you guys must get inundated with calls from men and women just like yourself across the nation who've experienced the foreign agents that are in public servant offices right now. Are you getting calls from others across the nation who tell you that they're in the same position because of not participating in crimes against their own people?
We get, honestly, the calls that we get are ones that say, hey, you guys are our voice. You need to keep talking. Keep talking. You're our voice. You're the pedestal. Stay out in the forefront. That's where the majority of the calls are. And it's from everywhere in the U.S. And that's, I think, what that's telling me is people that have been quiet for a long time are finally seeing there's a couple three guys out there that they can stand behind and that are going to take the brunt of it. And we will if we have to. But it allows other people to stand up and speak their minds and tell, hey, this country needs to get back on the right track because we're way off, and it's dangerously way off. And when I'm saying way off, not economically, you know, I'm saying dangerous as in physical danger to people in this country now. And I think people are finally starting to see that. And they're seeing us guys stand up and tell the truth. So I'm hoping we're sparking more, and we're going to continue to snowball and get more and more people coming forward and speaking out and using us. They use us to defend democracy, use us to defend the Constitution, use us to defend what we built this country on. That's what we want to do. They got to put us in this situation for a reason. I think that's it.
Well, I want to ask you if you two will think about this. You don't have to commit to it now, because what you just said actually leads into this. We need in our country, again, back to our sheriffs, we have many men and women in sheriff uniforms who are not doing their job. They are not following the oath of office. They are following the mighty dollar of corruption.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
What I would like to suggest is that you gentlemen branch out to meeting with sheriff organizations throughout the United States and explaining to them how, because I can tell you a lot of these people are home folk. You know, we've got a lot of majority of towns, and Carroll's town is well, and I live in Orange County, so you want to talk sheriff issues. But we need you guys explaining how important it is, just what you just said, but to the groups that can make the most efficient changes quickly. And that is our sheriffs in this nation, our governors. How do we get you in front of them to say, men, women, we were in Benghazi. We're here by the grace of God, still alive because of our talents and because of our work.
Yes, ma'am.
But many people have not come back alive. And our country is in a war with itself against the corruption of public servants who are not oath keepers. So would that be an avenue as well that you would begin going out into?
Yeah, and actually,
you know,
I served in
law enforcement, and what we have to do is, I mean, law enforcement, and that's something that's near and dear to me. Law enforcement is the first line of defense against those that are trying to take away our freedoms. Law enforcement has, you know, and I support them, and it's a tremendous, difficult job in everything that law enforcement does. But at the same time, they have the authority to take away your freedom on their word. They don't have to get a warrant. A judge has to get a warrant. Everybody else in the country has to get a warrant to arrest somebody, a cop. If they say they saw somebody do something, then they can arrest them on that right then and there. So in that, we have to keep them, we have to hold them to the highest of standard to make so they don't have even the appearance of corruption.
I agree. I agree. The sheriff office is where we really need to support, and we do a lot of support with the sheriffs, and we have a lot of stories of sheriff corruption. You know, look what's going on our borders.
It's the constitutional sheriffs. You should put them in contact with them.
I will. Good idea, Joe.
We'll speak to anybody who wants us to speak, and we just need to be put in contact with the right people. I think there's so much out there that we're just at the tip of the iceberg right now, as far as, because we do speaking, we talk to people, the book signing, we try to do Q&As, but yeah, we just, you know, honestly, we're still in the beginning stages, you know, 3 months in, and we're still, we need all the help we can get to get us in front of the right groups, you know, to speak
right.
to the people that need to. And so with your help and other people's help that we've been on their shows, we can do that. But, you know, we're novices when it comes to all the political agendas and the politicization of the
and as a novice, bit of unsolicited advice I can give you, because I didn't even I became a patriot just recently, although I have always been, I didn't know it, but I was flung into the world of at Bundy Ranch and in different events, and found very quickly that when you are a novice in that arena, you have a lot of people that come to you knowing that, trying to deflect you in different directions. I would like to just say that I admire what you're doing. I think this is exactly what our country needs. Our friend Thomas Nick, who is our dad on the borough many times with us, is a 41-year constitutionalist who wrote the plan of action, which is talking about exactly what you're saying right now. We need to educate. We need to rid our public servants' offices of those who won't do the job. And we need men like you and women out in the field in our nation protecting us, not just in foreign countries. Could you imagine private contractors and our military actually protecting our people here on our ground where our borders have been open? What are your thoughts on the border issue? Have you thought about, you know, because we've got gentlemen and women on the border working to protect the borders, and they're just coming across in mass numbers. What are your thoughts there? And I mean, even Canada, not just, you know, Mexican border, but Canadian border, everywhere. We've got all kinds of stuff. What can we do there? Either one of you gentlemen.
Go ahead, Tonto.
Looks like we lost him again. Hang on, how does that... There we go. Somehow, we've had fun, actually, on the backside. Carol doesn't know this, what I'm looking at, but this show has created... This has created a lot of work for me to keep the show going, FYI. We've been interrupted quite a few times. So I have friends who are actually saying, we can't even hear you, we can't get on. So...
Oh, wow.
Thank God. Yeah, thank God this is archived, because this show for you gentlemen and for us is very important. And what you have said on this show, I want to hear. I know we only have an hour and we're actually at that hour with you. But what I would like to hear from you is some of your thoughts related to, this is your family that you came back to. You have children.
Yes.
Give us some closing thoughts. If you were standing 10 years from now looking back and speaking to yourself about all of this again, what would you say to you on September 10th, now knowing what September 11th is going to bring? Will each of you give me just a little idea of what you would say?
I tell myself, leave earlier. Don't wait. Leave. I still feel responsible, and I think the guys do too, for Ambassador Stevens and Johnson's death. I am responsible for that, because we could have left earlier. That's going to haunt me for forever. Other than that, I'd say stay strong, and keep driving on, and keep fighting, and keep showing good examples to this country after it was all done. Because the night itself, instincts take over after that. That night was pure instincts of the many years of training that I've been put through and the situations I've been put through before. So that's going to take care of itself. It's just, but the only thing is, that biggest thing I would say to myself is leave earlier. And then fight, keep fighting until we win. Because I'm not going to quit until people know the truth and they see what this administration is and their true colors. I'm not stopping.
That's wonderful. And you?
You know, I look back on it, or I guess what I would tell myself or tell others or my kids is, and it's what I call that rooftop moment, when after I got injured and I was sitting there and I had to find within me that reason to keep going. And that's what anybody this day and age, you have to find that reason to stand up, to keep fighting. And each of us has that reason. It's going to be different. For me, it was the guys that I fought beside. It was to not let them down, not let down the people who we were protecting. And everyone in this country has a choice to make, and you either, when things get rough, you either stand up and move forward, or you stay sitting down and you end up losing. I mean, it's easy to be that person that doesn't put forth that effort. It's easy to be a loser. It's easy to not do something. What's difficult is to make the sacrifices to stand up, take a challenge, take a stance on an issue, and move forward on it. And that's what you have to do, is always move forward.
Right. And, well, and you guys, I want to say something real quick. No, I'm going to tell you who I understand, because the question was put to you by Renee of the day before. But I don't feel that you're responsible for anything, and there's much higher people on this totem pole that are totally responsible. I understand the guilt and stuff, but you've got to forgive yourself, and it's necessary, because these are events that have brought about other things and brought it into the light. I don't feel that you're responsible.
I don't either.
Guys that do what we do are always going to feel like that a bit. You're going to AR it and go, what could I have done different to affect the outcome? And, I should blame anybody else, but were there other people that made stupid decisions that night or even vindict's not a good word, decisions that may have been purposely made that affected the outcome negatively? Yeah, I think there has been. And we're going to get to the bottom of it. But still, when it comes down to it, I only feel like control is my own actions, and would have left earlier, we would have saved him. So it's going to hurt, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Thank you.
But you could have
leave earlier. I won't ever
lose that. You had a chain of authority, and I amen what Carol just said to you, because you were doing what you were supposed to do, and had you left on the first stand down, you really would have just been violating authority. But your witness to the stand down, gave you evidence to the fact that there was something else going on there, and it wasn't right. So you can't blame yourselves, because you took a job that you had an oath to do, and it was not you that violated the job. It was your higher-ups, and it goes as high up as it can go. And if people can't recognize,
oh, no, the highest is God. It doesn't go up that high. Just Hillary
really?
And all them.
You're right.
Free the bitch.
I love it. I'm coming back on your show. You got to have me back on.
Well, gentlemen, we are definitely having you back on. But before we go off, I want to talk about the Shadow Warriors. Can you bring that up a little bit first for us? Because the next show, Carol and I are going to have you on, as we've discussed. I talked with Mark about this, Chris, is with wives present and talking about the good works that are happening since Benghazi. So we're going to have you back within the holiday time, when it's all about thankful and family. And we're going to talk about that. But give us a little prelude of what's going on with Shadow Warriors.
Shadow Warriors is an organization my wife and I started because we found through my injuries there is lack of long-term support. And sometimes there's limited, because we're contractors, there's limited immediate support for contractors. What we've done is we've set a goal of $25,000 to raise. So far, we have raised $4,000. And anybody that feels compelled to come help, either through donations or their services, to learn more about it, our webpage is shadowwarriorsproject.org. That's O-R-G. And learn a little bit more about it. You can leave questions if you have for us. We will get back to those. And, it's just so we can make a difference in those that serve in the shadows, the private military contractors that are serving in the dark or in the shadows that people don't hear about. And if something happens, most of the time you'll never hear about it. You won't know. But if you do want to feel like you're helping and, reach out, there's a donate button there. And, anything that anybody can give would be wonderful.
Well, and I'd like to have you also start thinking about who to bring on regarding Shadow Warriors, maybe some men that you in the interim are helping, men or women. And let's make that show, the Shadow Warriors, our Shadow Nation. Carol and I are big on shadow cases, shadow dockets that are harming us behind the scenes in the judiciary. This show will be about the light in the shadow, which is the men and women doing good work and being kicked to the curb. Again, that all goes back to health care, that all goes back to we as a country need to start taking care of our own. I'd like to send a shout out to Ambassador Chris Stevens, Sean Smith, Tyrone Woods, and Glenda, and I think his last name is Doherty. Please let me know if I'm saying it wrong. But all of their families.
No, you're saying it right.
You know, all of their families and all of your families and anyone who touched was touched at Benghazi that day on the ground. There's many people who are not in the light as far as for public to see, but you gentlemen know who they are. And we just want to, Carol and I just want to offer our support, our love, our whatever guidance and that you can give us to help your job become easier across this nation. I'm going to reach out and connect you with the CISPOLA group and with some other groups. And we just love you guys for what you've done and for who you are and who your family is becoming in spite of what has happened and because of what has happened. You're going to be very different old men to sit in rocking chairs with.
Yeah, there's some university people that we can maybe put them in contact with too so they can speak to these universities to get some of these economic professors and political science professors to take note and pay attention to the other side of this coin.
That'd be great.
I love it.
I'm all for it. We appreciate it. All the help you can give us, it just makes our case stronger, and it helps. I think it helps the country. So we appreciate it, and I appreciate it. Definitely. Thank you.
Well, and if you haven't heard of the product VeriGuard, they're a sponsor on our show now. We kind of sponsor them at the same time for the Ebola outbreak, which we're not going to go into all of that. But there are things that we can do as a nation to protect ourselves from the outside and the inside. So, gentlemen, Chris.
Hey, well, let them talk about their book real quick.
About what?
Their book.
Oh, please. Yeah, Valvin's sake. My goodness, we can't forget that, Carol.
the book's 13 hours. 13 hours. It was written by us and the guy that actually can write real well, Mitchell Zukoff. Very, very good book. I think it's doing very well. You know, we were New York Times, number one New York Times bestseller list for a couple weeks. We're still on the list. I'm not sure what we are now, 8 or 9. We've been on it for about 6 weeks. What I want people to know on that especially is left or right, you know, Mitchell Zukoff is a left-leaning Democrat. And we are right. The majority of us on the Annex team are all conservatives, and we were able to come together and tell the truth together because he wanted to know the truth. And I said, he is the utmost upstanding individual I know. I don't care if he's a Democrat or not, but it just proves that you know conservatives and Democrats can't come together if they want to know the truth and do good things.
When I called Hillary Clinton a bitch. I don't care what party she stands for. That's how it is. We pay for this show so I can say whatever I want.
that's where the media comes in and says, well, this is too political. It's a right-leaning book. No, it's not. Guess what? You're eating one of your own. The guy that supported you forever that wrote that, he just wants the truth out. And here's the proof in pudding, 13 hours. Don't try to make it right. It's not. It's not a right-wing book. It's the truth. And that just shows, again, that maybe the administration is controlling some of the media outlets that we're using. I'm just saying. It's quite possible.
No, they are. They are.
Yeah.
And maybe
we know for
maybe
sure
maybe
that they are. We can say with certainty.
Yep, yeah, for certainty. And we also know
so.
We need to get the attorneys out of public servant seats, because when we can literally be told and they can laugh and say, ha, what attorney do you know that tells the truth? That's a problem.
Yeah.
That why would
no,
we have anyone in that capacity running our country at all? People need to quit voting attorneys in and quit allowing the British accredited registry, which is foreign, to run our country. It's got to stop.
No.
It comes back and just like you.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Couldn't say it better myself again. Well, if people want to know the truth in Benghazi, read the book. That's the truth. That is the truth, God honest truth, and it doesn't get any more truer than that. If they don't want to know the truth, don't read it, and then you'll never know.
Well, God bless you all. Carol, anything else before we let these gentlemen go? We've already thrown them over. We haven't let you stand down yet, gentlemen.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it.
Thank you so much for coming on. It was wonderful.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Your wife,
Elaine,
we thank them as well. We're really glad
Can you hold this one?
And we're going to
you.
See you. We're going to have you back on around Thanksgiving time. We'll get back with you gentlemen
Please.
To book it. But we'll have a family show where even your children can come on and say hi. So God bless
that'd
you.
That'd be great. God bless you, too.
Have a great afternoon, Mark and Chris. Tell Tig hi, and love to all.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks so much.
I'm living. How far is heaven? And I.